the way that our brains see the world is incredible. And when we don't mess with that, when we lean into it and witness it in a way that isn't shaming or dismissive, but more so curious and asking questions and empowering people to trust themselves, to trust that their brains do make sense, to trust that, yes, we have complete opposites. We are sometimes really hyper-focused and sometimes really distracted. We sometimes have incredible attention to detail and other times we have no attention to detail. Sometimes we are incredible listeners and can hold space in a way that many other people struggle to. And other times we overshare, we may interrupt. And holding all of that with its dichotomies, with its contradictions, and where is the thing in that way of being that is unique and special and needed in our world? Just like each species of monkey is needed for the diversity and the biodiversity and the ecosystem to be balanced. We need it all. Hello, hello, and welcome back to the Future ADHD podcast. I'm your host, Grace Coulmer, and this week on the podcast, I'm talking about something that I've been holding very deep and close to my heart, something I've been wanting to say for a long time. I'm sharing what I really think of the ADHD label and why it's crucial we define ourselves by what we are instead of what we're not. When I redefined the ADHD label for myself and reclaimed my identity in terms of who I am instead of in terms of my deficits, it was absolutely life-changing. In this episode, I also cover a part of my diagnosis story, living life as a teenager and 20-something without knowing about my neurotype, why life was so hard when I kept trying to force myself to be neurotypical, feeling like I'd missed the guidebook on how to be normal, what's at stake when we only focus on our deficits, and what it looks like to celebrate, honor, and trust my neurodivergent brain, and then being able to do the same for other ADHDers in my life. This episode is the first in a mini-series all about what's actually happening inside our ADHD brains and how we can get curious about that, so make sure you tune in to hear the rest of the series across the next few weeks. Okay, on to the episode. Life with an ADHD brain can be a wild ride, swinging between intense obsessions and hyperfocus to exhaustion and overwhelm. And sometimes these pendulum swings can feel very lonely in a world that doesn't truly understand neurodiversity. But what if our daydreaming, impulsivity, and fierce obsessions all make complete sense? What if we're not flawed or disordered, but rather living in a fast-paced world that wasn't designed for our brilliant ADHD brains? Believe me, I know firsthand that living with ADHD isn't easy, and we'll definitely talk about those challenges here too. But after decades focusing on the deficiencies, it's time for a shift. Join me as we explore the latest ADHD research and take a deep dive into topics like unconscious limiting beliefs, habits and productivity, mindset, self-care, and nervous system nourishment. I'll also chat to a range of neurodivergent guests, so we can challenge the status quo, change the conversation, and shape the future of ADHD together. Hello, hello, welcome back to the podcast. I'm your host, Grace, and I'm really excited to be talking to you this week about a topic that is really close to my heart and has probably had the biggest impact, I would say, on my mindset, how I approach things, and my journey with my ADHD in the past year. So I'm sitting here today. It's raining outside. It's a bit windy. So if you hear that ambiance in the background, that's what's going on. But I really actually love recording on a rainy day. It just feels cozy and it feels intimate, and I just get sort of contemplative and pensive about certain things. And so today I thought I would hop on and start the beginning of a mini series on this podcast about leaning in and working with our brains. So why this topic in particular? Well, I will go on to explain a fair bit about what I've been thinking in regards to positive psychology, in regards to young people and identity and forming sort of a strong identity about who we are as people with brain-based differences in a world that's very neurotypical. And that is something that I think is not talked about enough and needs to be sort of brought more into the central focus of the whole neurodiversity conversation. But for me personally, And I wanted to start here because I think it really grounds and gives clarity and also sort of a background into my journey a bit on this episode. So I lived most of my life until my early 30s not knowing that I had ADHD and not knowing anyone else really like me, though looking back now I can see that there were a lot of people in my life that share these characteristics, and I was drawn to people with these more divergent brains and ways of thinking about the world. But I didn't have a name for it, and that created a lot of internalized shame and confusion and constantly feeling less than, feeling on the outside occasionally, or just feeling like I didn't get that guidebook, that rule book that everyone else seemed to have got at birth, which taught you how to engage in, say, a group of girls who are all chatting and bitching and gossiping, and how not to put your foot in it or be too direct or to offend people with honesty. I feel like I didn't get the guidebook when it came to how to study for university assignments or how not to get distracted at school and stop listening to the teacher, or how not to do something impulsive and get a detention. And in hindsight, I can see that there were so many things that were sort of inside me that I didn't have language for, so many ways of being that weren't validated and weren't valued and weren't spoken about in popular culture. And I think it is really similar to that idea of the LGBTQ movement and people who struggle with sexual identities that in the, you know, 60s, 70s, 80s, even the 90s were gaslit, were dismissed, were the punchline of jokes, and not seeing representation really made them sort of hide who they were, put that in the shadow. You know, even religious oppression and that kind of thing would really change the way that they saw themselves. And when more people started speaking proudly about their identities, and you know, having protests and marches and pride marches, and in social media exploding with people sharing about, this is who I am, I'm proud of it, that created expansion for those people who were in the closet still to come out and share who they were with the world. And I think that ADHD is a very similar thing in terms of an identity that the world doesn't accommodate, that it hasn't created structures for, that doesn't fully understand. And so it's put in the shadow, it's put in the deficit box. And we haven't until recently seen a lot of examples of people saying, this is me, this is how I operate, this is my brain. And we're only just now in the last, you know, few years on social media starting to get these examples. And so that's one piece of my story, that I didn't have that growing up. I was born in the very late 80s, and so I went through school in the 90s without social media, and I didn't have those examples of people speaking openly about their brain, their neurotypes, and what made them different but still incredible as humans. And so what that created in me was sort of some big question marks and some shadowy self-doubt and lack of confidence when it came to pretty much everything in my life. I didn't know how to trust myself because I didn't really know who I was. I didn't really know what made me different, because there was no language for that. There was no specificity for that. And when I learned that ADHD was a thing, that was a huge moment. And there was a lot of aha and feeling seen and feeling heard and feeling relief and grief as well, that I'd spent so many years of my life without knowing what this was, and maybe I could have received help earlier. So that was a very real and heavy process, but also one full of curiosity and smiles of relief. And it was a mix of things, as I'm sure many of you can relate to. But what happened was that
the more I read about ADHD, the more I learned how many deficits there were. And as I got diagnosed and went through that process of going through several questionnaires, it really knocked my confidence, because suddenly all of the negative parts, all of the less than, all of the dysfunctional, all of the not quite there yet, not quite, in inverted commas, normal enough qualities were brought out. And I didn't relate to those fully. Like, of course I experienced them, and of course that's, you know, where we got to in the interview, was exploring how that resonated for me. But I felt like there was something missing, something quite crucial. And I found that in my own life and in my business and in my work, I was struggling because I was coming up against a lot of resistance when it came to doing things the way that other people did them. So I would expect myself to work between the hours of 9 and 5, because that is normal. I would expect myself to have the same level of productivity every day, because that is what healthy, normal, neurotypical people do. And if you're doing hyperfocus and going deep on something and then you burn out and you're exhausted and you need 3 weeks off, well, that's dysfunctional. That's not normal. And so I kept on trying to almost fix myself, to change all of these parts of myself that were dysfunctions and put them into that box of, I can be more neurotypical, just watch me try, I can do it. And pushing up against that resistance kind of was like running at a wall and bouncing off constantly and hitting my head, because it was working against my ADHD and it was driving me crazy. And I started exploring and coming across podcasts and books like ADHD 2.0 and ADHD for Women by Sari Solden and other books that started giving me little sprinkles and hints of coming at our neurotype, our brain-based difference, from more of a positive psychology perspective. Looking at what is instead of what is not. Looking at what we have and the qualities that naturally come to us that we find easy, instead of looking at all of the deficits and all of the problems first. And I started realizing through some incredible coaching and some incredible examples of other leaders in this space who also have ADHD, that if I leaned into what my brain just wanted to do anyway, and ran with that as many times as I could, and celebrated that and honored that and respected that and trusted that, that maybe things could get easier for me, that I wouldn't be throwing myself up against a wall just trying to be more neurotypical, and actually just go, hey, I have a divergent brain. It's pretty contradictory. It's pretty emotional. And I wonder what would happen if I just let myself be that way as much as I could. And obviously there are times where we need to mask. There are times where it's not appropriate to just, you know, have an emotional meltdown or to talk someone's ear off about a topic that you're interested in, maybe in a job interview. It's like not the time to go on about your hyperfocus or all of the podcasts you've listened to on that topic. There will be times where we have to edit ourselves, to censor ourselves, but letting myself be myself and sort of almost like wallow like a pig in mud, you know, like just splash around in the weirdness of my personality and just let it be. That was the most impactful shift, because when I started doing that, I started to see massive growth in my areas of work and hyperfocus. So I started to just go with what felt intuitive. I started to just go with the way that my brain worked. And out of that, I created a planner that was intuitive, that was just based on not what every other planner was doing, but what I wanted to see and what I felt the world needed. That planner has now sold 26,000 copies in under a year. And our business has, as a result, exploded into more than a full-time income for our whole family, plus a staff of 6 part-timers. And we're just going from strength to strength. And so my thoughts on this aren't just random thoughts. These are thoughts that I have experimented with and played with, and they have been the number one thing in unlocking my creativity and my potential and helping me push through barriers and actually get to a place of leadership, running my own company and making multiple 6 figures a year. And all of that has just been incredible. And I couldn't have done it if I had kept on seeing my brain as only a deficit, as only having problems. So that is why I wanted to share this with you today, because these things have been life-changing for me and I want to share them with people. And I want to see so many other people unlocked and given a permission slip to just be who they want to be. And even if that doesn't fit the box and the neurotypical world out there, knowing that I don't think science fully understands our brains yet. And they're a fair long way off, I think, because they're not asking the right questions yet. And they're focused on fixing the squeaky wheels, on supporting particularly children in mainstream education where there just isn't capacity to create environments that are low stim all of the time. And so these kids do need supports and they do need a lot of help, but science yet hasn't had the time or the funding or the curiosity to ask, well, what if we just let these brains be the way that they are and accepted that there is incredible validity and importance and strength and value in brains like these, that they don't have to be fixed constantly, that we can actually just look at them and go, wow, you're like that. How cool is that? There is some awesome strengths there. And if your brain wasn't like that, it would suck, because there is just so much that ADHD brains can do so much better than other brains. And that's just a fact, because all brains have their strengths and ours are, you know, there's so many, but there's hyperfocus, there's curiosity, there's passion, there's intensity, there's endurance, problem solving ability, the ability to network and change people's lives and be passionate about topics in a way that lights people up and ignites people. And we can be great advocates for different causes. Like the list just goes on. And those things are innate to who we are. We don't have to try. We don't have to effort. If we just get out of our own way and remove all of the obstacles and the opinions of people who tell us that we're broken and flawed, we can just be and fly and do these incredible things. I want to talk more about this idea of what is at stake when we only focus on our deficits, on the things that we struggle with, that we can't do as well as neurotypicals. And when I label myself ADHD, while it does help connect, while it does help to educate, to find other people in this space, which is incredible, I tend not to think too much about what it actually means. I just sort of make up in my own mind what it means for me, because I like being defined by who I am. I like being defined by what I am. And that's really important. And so I want to give an example of why I realized for me it was so important. And when I connected this, how things got a little bit easier in my life and in quite a significant way. So let's use the example of you've just been on a holiday somewhere, you've been to a beautiful place, you've got home, and your friends say, oh my goodness, how are you? Where did you go for your holiday? I want you to imagine that instead of telling them where you went, you told them where you didn't go. I did not go to the city. I did not go to a lake. I did not go to a forest. I didn't go to a desert island. I didn't go to a resort. I didn't go to America. I didn't go to France. I didn't go to the Bahamas. Do you see why this is a tricky thing to understand? Because if our friend keeps telling us everywhere they didn't go, we really have no idea where they did go. We don't know where it is that they went and why that was special to them. And I think the same is true with ADHD. That when we only think about ADHD in terms of everything that we're not, all of the deficits, all of the shortfalls, all of the struggles, while it is important to talk about those, if we only define our brain-based neurological difference by what we're not, we won't discover what we are and who we are and why that's incredible and why the world needs us. So I want to do that in this mini series on the podcast. I want to explore a few different aspects, and there are so many I could cover, and I think I will continue to cover over the course of the podcast, but for now, there's just a couple that I really want to lean into and explore and celebrate and be specific about, because like an artist painting a picture, when we start to describe, to be specific about, to think about the qualities of certain characteristics that many of us share, we start to paint this picture of who we are. And so, like the holiday example, we'll say, I went to this incredible rainforest waterfall location and I stayed in a cabin and it was right above the waterfall and I could hear birds singing in the trees and I could hear, you know, the water running at nighttime as I was going off to sleep, and it really helped to calm me. And every day the people at the location would bring me beautiful fresh fruit on a platter and there were butterflies. And when we describe in that way, can you not start to picture exactly where that person went on holiday and why they loved it? And now you really get a sense of, oh wow, that was their experience. That's where they were. And you connect with that. And in the same way, when we describe our ADHD in terms of who we are, what our natural instincts are, what our natural gifts are, how we operate in the world, and why that's a really us thing to do, we really create that specificity and we honor the full lived experience of a whole population of people within our population. Like, there are so many people who have brains like this, and many undiagnosed too, that we don't even know about. And so by thinking about really clearly who and what we are and defining ourselves by that, it really gives us power. It really gives us an identity, so that we're not walking around as, I'm a not this and I'm a not that. I have poor focus. I have no attention. I have poor emotional regulation. I struggle to get cleaning tasks done. Yeah, okay, that's all true. But what's the impact? I think it's pretty huge, actually. And the reason I'm so passionate about talking about ADHD in as many ways as we can, including as many lived experiences, as many stories, as many angles, is so that we can create this fuller picture and really start to tease apart the nuances and the details and the beauty in brains that are very conflicting at times, that somehow the world thinks doesn't make sense, because in many ways, our world likes things to be ordered and predictable and to make sense all of the time and to be able to be put on a spreadsheet or tracked. And that can be really helpful with some neurological conditions. Like, there are so many things that science has brought us and so many things in the ADHD space that science has taught us. And I'm not discounting that, but I'm also really pushing for imagining a world where we can discuss and explore and be curious and have scientific research that's curious about what is happening inside our kinds of brains naturally, and not trying to fit that within an existing model that is the way to be, the neurotypical standard, but actually just saying, well, these brains really do that differently. And just like there are so many species of monkeys and each species of monkey has a completely different way of being in their habitat, of sleeping, of cleaning, of eating, of traveling, of migrating, of being in tribal communities. There are similarities, of course, among all monkey species, but also really distinct differences and how science and conversations and journalism and podcasts like these can explore what is happening. And maybe there's a huge missing piece here, and that is that the way that our brains see the world is incredible. And when we don't mess with that, when we lean into it and celebrate it and are curious about it and witness it in a way that isn't shaming or dismissive, but more so curious and asking questions and empowering people to trust themselves, to trust that their brains do make sense, to trust that, yes, we have complete opposites. We are sometimes really hyper-focused and sometimes really distracted, or we sometimes have incredible attention to detail and other times we have no attention to detail. Sometimes we are incredible listeners and can hold space in a way that many other people struggle to. And other times we overshare, we may interrupt, we may sort of feel like we messed up in a conversation and said too much. And holding all of that with its dichotomies, with its contradictions, and saying, where is the thing in that way of being that is unique and special and needed in our world? Just like each species of monkey is needed for the diversity and the biodiversity and the ecosystem to be balanced. We need it all. And each part has such a crucial part to play. Another reason this is a topic that I revisit often in my ponderings, in my, you know, dreamy explorations when I'm daydreaming, is because I have a 7-year-old son and I am constantly chatting to him about what I love about his brain, about what makes his brain different to other people's, and how there's lots of people who have brains a bit like his, and how there are people with brains that are really different from his, and those are really interesting too. And really starting to give language and words to what so many of us already see on the outside, which is diversity. Diversity of looks, diversity of size, diversity of language, diversity of skin color. We already know this about our species as humans. We understand this. And so when we start to be specific about how our brains work and dialogue with that with our kids, they will start to see how neurodiversity works in terms of our brains being just as different on the inside as our appearances are on the outside. But I am really passionate about this topic when it comes to our little people, because it is a concern, I think, that young people grow up being defined by what they're not. And I think that there is a danger that they will see themselves in a very shadowy light. It's as if there is a light shining and there is a shadow created from that light that's shining, and we're only focusing on the shadow. And it's just, I think, a real shame that we only focus on the shadow so much of the time, and that science diagnoses and pathologizes based on the shadow, because there is so much room for diagnosing and being explorative and curious about what the light is. What is happening? Why is that light creating that shadow? Like, what is the power in that light? When you let that light shine exactly the way that it was wired to do, that it has evolved to do, what makes that light unique and different and powerful? And I know that maybe there'll be some people listening who have a really valid reason for saying that, well, the shadow needs to be focused on. That's where the issues lie. That's where the problems are, the dysfunctions are, the things that get in the way of a healthy lifestyle. And I would 100% agree. And I think it makes sense that the squeaky wheel gets the grease, that when we have issues, we need support in managing those. But I do pose the question that if we balanced out supporting and focusing on areas of challenge with focusing just as much on areas of light and strength and natural power and natural expertise and natural tendencies and leaned into those as well, if that would create this confidence. I mean, science has shown that it does. When you have a strength-based positive psychology approach, especially with young children, but also with adults, when they are focusing on what they can do and what is really brilliant about their brains, they can do a lot of things that they find challenging with a lot more ease. So basically, when we feel better about ourselves, we do a lot better. And a lot of those shadow problems, a lot of those difficulties and struggles become more so natural ebbs and flows, natural yins and yangs in our personality. And we work out, okay, well, if we can really throw some support and encouragement and validation behind the things that we find easy, the things that we're good at, if we can work with our brains, if we can find opportunities to put those characteristics, those strengths into practice, whether it's in a career, whether it's at school, focusing on how you can build on strengths. And then once you've done that and that person starts to feel like they know who they are, their identity, they're proud of that identity, they know that they can contribute and that they're needed and that things about them are specialist, are unique, and are very powerful and sought after. Then those other things, the shadow side, the things that don't come as naturally, they can get support with, but it doesn't come from that place of less than, of shame, of deficit, of you're broken and you need to be fixed. And if all of that is sounding wishy-washy or too positive or idealistic, I'm going to give some very tangible examples in the next couple of episodes, particularly in the episode where I talk about leaning into our brain's natural hyperactivity and the racing thoughts. And I'll give an example of a few things I tried with my son that were absolutely life-changing when it came to helping him just lean in and accept and love the way his brain works. And I think that's why I'm so passionate about this and exploring this more fully, is because young people's brains are so heavily affected by these negative messages, by the messages of you're not good enough, you'll never have a satisfying or productive life because you have this deficit and this issue. And that just creates this internalized negativity and a lack of identity that means that people can't really succeed in the way that their brains are designed to let them succeed, to just run with what is, to run with what's good, to run with what's already there and already flourishing, and to not squash that with a really negatively skewed diagnosis that just talks about deficits. So in this mini series, I'm going to focus in each episode on a few inherent and innate qualities of ADHD brains that come up a lot. There are obviously so many I could cover, but I really want to focus on these, partly because a lot of the time they are seen in somewhat of a negative light, especially in diagnosis processes where the questions are formulated around discovering what your attentional deficits might be, whether you struggle with coming in and out of attention while in a conversation or interrupting a lot, or perhaps you struggle with hyperactivity and overwhelm of thoughts in your brain. And I want to reframe those and look, instead of looking at the shadow, to really focus on the light. So I want to cover hyperfocus and really diving into what hyperfocus is and sharing some stories from my life about how I am so grateful that I have the ability to hyperfocus and the gifts that it's given me and the ways that it's incredibly contributed to my career trajectory, to my work now with Future ADHD, to the success and the growth of our company and our movement and our advocacy work. And so I'll go into that in one of the episodes. I also want to talk about why it's so crucial for ADHD brains to dream and to let our minds wander, to be still and lazing around, I like to call it, to be in that flow state, that dreamy state of not productive, but just following our intuition, following our curiosity, letting our minds wander in that divergent way. And the final thing is I want to explore finding more ease and simplicity and going with the flow more often. So that's what's coming. And if that interests you, then definitely stay tuned, because I'll be diving into those topics in the next three episodes. I'm so glad you're here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting the podcast. And thank you to those people who have reached out personally and shared with me what this podcast means to them and how it's helped them. That truly is incredible to hear. And I just absolutely love connecting with you, knowing that I'm not just talking to my podcast mic, but there are people out there listening who are finding value from it and who are sharing with me the thoughts, the aha moments, the other ideas that they came up with while listening, because I just absolutely love that dialogue. So thank you to those people. And if you loved this episode, feel free to share it with anyone that you think would be interested. You can share it on social media. You can email the link. It all helps, and it's all just a really good way to continue to support my work if my work is of impact to you. So thank you so much for listening, and I'll catch you next week.
Thanks so much for joining me for today's episode. And if you're keen for more, we have a lot of free resources on our website, futureadhd.com, where you can also buy our planners and support tools. Our Future ADHD planners are based on the latest neuroscience and have a unique build-as-you-go format, which makes them different to your average planner. This feature makes it ridiculously easy to pick up where you left off, even if you miss weeks or months at a time, without the shame spirals, guilt, or critical self-talk. Our digital version works with iPads, iPhones, Android tablets and Android phones, Windows and Macs. We also have a printable version for those who love paper and pen. Join almost 20,000 neurodivergents who have downloaded our planners and say that this is the first planner they've ever been able to stick with, because it's designed to work with your creative, inconsistent, divergent, non-linear brain. And if you want to watch a planner walkthrough or learn more about Future ADHD and our mission, check out our Instagram and TikTok, future.adhd, and of course our website, futureadhd.com.